You want answers? I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
Dave Hodges is as mad as hell, and he's not gonna take it anymore.
I'd like to help you, Judge, yes, I really, really would, but the din in my head, it's too much and it's no good. I'm standing in a window tunnel, shouting through the water, and I'd like to give the information, asking for the wood plug makes noise. It's ringing in my ear, blood makes noise, and I can't really hear you in the thickening of fear.
Common sense is not so common. This is the Common Sense Show with Dave Hodges.
Welcome to hour number three, and you are listening to the Common Sense Show. And look, I apologize for the gremlins we're having. I got reports of English travelogue voices speaking over our first hour conversation at the 12-minute mark, and I've gotten two people talking about that, and then we had to go off Comrex, which is our main radio studio quality type of equipment, to another deliverer, and it wasn't as good, and we had issues with that. We're back on our regular, so I apologize. Hard to believe that it's not being orchestrated, the same as what happened to my website. In fact, I have another anomaly to report. The person who does my uploading for video, I pointed out to them the 10 photos I had that showed the UN vehicle staging area in Maryland. I even read the address. I mean, it's so specific. And they were pretty taken back by the pictures. They go, this is about as clear as it gets. And not one of the photos is up there on YouTube. Now, we're going to reload. The only thing that's there right now is the logo, Dave Hodges, Common Sense Show. So we are going to reload this, and if YouTube takes it down, we're still going to publish this on the website at thecommonsenseshow.com. A couple of quick news and notes. I would recommend everyone get Virtual Shield, and you can go to virtualshield.com and use my name, Hodges, to get 20% off. I use it now because it bounces my VPN. I don't want people to track me in real time. Now, if I think I'm going to go farther down the list by using a VPN that works, no, I'm not, and I realize that. But some of you haven't done enough out there yet to have the big enough digital footprint to have a threat matrix score that Mike Adams and I talked about in the last hour, and you really need to have something like this, and don't use one of the free ones because they typically don't work. But you can get into Virtual Shield for as low as $4.95. I go a little higher than that because I like some of the extras, but it's not very much at all. And it does work, and I have been able to verify that it works, and I've had a lot of thank you notes from people out there that it does work. So go to virtualshield.com. It's also advertised in the description box on YouTube. And a real quick note here, a couple things that we are considering. We're going to probably expand our radio because right now Google hasn't figured out a way to screw that up, and they probably will adapt. But it's something that we're going to move more of our operations and information to radio, and so we're going to really push the radio end of things. Also, too, just a final word. You heard Mike talk about the importance of preparation. Actually, you heard me comment that after Mike kind of laid the stage. And that's why we support Numana. We can help you with the food. Go to numana.com/Hodges and use the coupon code Hodges9 to take 5% off. I mean, that's in everyone's best interest. Okay, the next interview is between James Wesley Rawls and myself. It's a pre-record, and I'm telling you, in the second half hour, this normally very conservative, soft-spoken man who's an expert in his field, among the best, you will not believe what he said that the George Soros-inspired terrorists are going to go to next. Absolutely incredible and frightening. I'll tell you, at the summary of these 3 hours, if you're not losing sleep, you have a lot stronger constitution than I do. Okay, Todd, let's go ahead and play that interview with Jim. Hi, everybody. This is Dave Hodges of the Common Sense Show, and we're the show that's freeing America, one enslaved mind at a time. And on the phone with me, I have James Wesley Rawls. We like to call him Jim, and he is really well known. He needs no introduction. His specialty is survival, and he helps people with that. He has a website called Survival Blog, and we'll talk more about that before we leave Jim tonight. But I asked Jim to come on and talk about some of the world crises and national crises that are going on that could serve as an impediment to our well-being and ultimately our survival, and what he would advise people to do. Jim, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me on, Dave.
Well, let's start with what's happening in Charlottesville. I actually called for this back in May. I thought it would happen a lot sooner than it did, and I certainly wouldn't have predicted it would be over monuments, but I mean, whatever works to get people in the streets, I guess, is what George Soros would say. And where do you see this going, and do you think there is an existential threat to the safety and survival of Americans?
Well, yes, certainly for urban Americans, because if you look at the way that Antifa has developed, it is very similar in some ways to what happened in the late 1960s with the radicalization of the anti-war movement in the United States. And there are some very close parallels. I did a two-part article in my blog on this, on the threat spirals that I anticipate. I think that there will be several factions that develop within Antifa, some of which will be incredibly radical. And they keep throwing around the phrase, by any means necessary. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of them take that quite literally. And what happened a month ago with the man named Hodgkinson, who shot up a congressional baseball practice, I think was just a precursor of what we're going to see in earnest. The recent events at Charlottesville are another example of just how radical some of these people are. I think their next step will be to transition from street riots into a terror campaign of bombings and perhaps chemical or biological or even radiological weapons used as terror weapons against populations, urban populations, and against the Trump administration. They may have a campaign of assassinations, and I think they're going to use a lot of off-the-shelf technologies. Most importantly, I think they're going to use cyber weapons, because they can use those in kind of a standoff fashion. And if they work through enough VPNs, conceivably they could even do it without even being backtraced. And they're also probably going to be using some off-the-shelf technologies like quadricopter drones to deliver either small explosives or chemical weapons. So we really have just seen the beginning of what Antifa has planned. And again, there'll be several different factions, and a lot of these factions will be very small cells that will be almost impossible for law enforcement or intelligence agencies to penetrate. And because of that, it'll be very difficult to stop them.
This is so disturbing. I mean, I kind of expected you. Let me talk about my anticipation of what you were going to say at this point. I thought you were going to say, well, we're going to probably see about 20 or 25 Charlottesvilles, but you're jumping to a whole new level. And when you talk about radiological bombs, this is worse than anything they went through in Ireland. It's worse than the West Bank. You're talking about taking this to a level of terrorism that's really rare in the whole world.
Well, yeah. We have a society that is fairly technologically savvy, and especially the millennial generation is quite technologically savvy. And I think it'd be foolish of us to assume that they're not going to use a lot of those technologies to the fullest extent they can. So we need to plan accordingly, and we need to anticipate the threat spirals that are going to develop.
I guess where I'm a little baffled, and I help me understand this, because I know my listeners would ask the same question. Having the desire to dump radiological bombs or invoke chemical weapon attacks from drones, it's one thing to want to do it. It's another thing to have the means to do it. Let's talk about that.
Well, for a dirty bomb, all they would need is it wouldn't have to even necessarily even be fissile material. They could, it's much easier to get a hold of nuclear waste than it is weapons-grade plutonium or uranium. So they could get a hold of nuclear waste, or, you know, they could even use really low-grade things like tritium, for example, which could actually even be bought commercially. And then because all they're really after is a terror effect, all they would have to do is set off a dirty bomb in a confined space, say like a large subway station or a Grand Central Station, for example, and then make an announcement. It would look like just a small conventional explosion. People wouldn't realize it was a radiological bomb until they actually made a, you know, an attribution type phone call to the media. And then as soon as the law enforcement or civil defense or whoever team show up with radiological monitoring equipment, they'll say, oh, yes, there is substantially above background radiation here. There was some kind of radiological device. That's all that's going to be needed to create absolute panic. And could you imagine having a place like Grand Central Station or, say, one of the major interconnect subway stations in New York or Washington, D.C., or another major city contaminated? And people would be afraid to use it for months. Even if the authorities said, we've cleaned up the mess, people wouldn't believe it. It'd be the ultimate terror weapon.
When you say ultimate terror weapon, you're not kidding. What kind of casualty rates would we typically look at in a densely populated urban area?
Well, with a chemical weapon or conceivably a biological weapon, that you could have a pretty high number of casualties. It's really hard to predict. It all depends on what technology they got a hold of, how it was dispersed, and you know how long it might linger. But it's conceivably could take the lives of thousands of people. Especially, I think a chemical weapon or a nerve gas type weapon could be quite lethal. And again, if it's in a confined space, say a subway station or inside of a domed stadium during a sporting event, for example, you could see 2,000 or 3,000 people killed easily.
Now, to what end? How would they try to work this to the advantage of the deep state or whoever would be behind such a move? What do you think the political ends would be?
Well, the goal, of course, is to destabilize the Trump administration, I think is their main goal. Mm-hmm. Because when you come right down to the ideology that's behind Antifa, they are radical socialists. They thought that Hillary Clinton was not socialist enough and that Bernie Sanders was just barely socialist enough to suit their likings. And with that in mind, they're on an absolute warpath against the Trump administration. They will attempt any tactics they can to try to destabilize the administration. And I think what one of their goals might be, because they claim to be anti-fascist, one of their goals might be to provoke the administration into taking draconian countermeasures so that they can then say, aha, here's the fascism we were talking about.
Well, that was one of the things I've been wondering. Could Trump's hand be forced to the point where he would have no choice but to invoke martial law?
It's conceivable. And he could also suspend habeas corpus. There could be mass arrests. There's a lot of different things that I think they're hoping he will resort to. And if they have mass terror attacks, they could try to force the Trump administration into that position. Now, just to back up a little bit, Dave, ironically, what Trump stands for is anti-fascism, because he's in favor of reducing the size of government and reducing government control over corporations. And the very definition of fascism is government control of corporations. So he actually is the anti-fascist, ironically.
Well, the illogic on what he calls the alt-left, and I love that term, but the illogic is just incomprehensible to me. So nothing has to make any sense here. You know, I talked to someone in the Democratic Party here in Arizona where I live, about 6-7 months ago, and I said, well, how can you continue to make these arguments? They're totally illogical and totally unproven. And the answer I got was, it's not about the correctness, it's about keeping the fight going. This is what I was told, and this person's about as liberal as they get, and they're all for unrestrained Muslim immigration, open borders, and I tend to think that's a line, you know, pretty much right out of some of the more radicals in our history. But let's take this to a little further level. If Trump has to respond with crackdowns, National Guard crackdowns, or possibly martial law in different areas, wouldn't that be a good time for the deep state to take him out because they'd inherit a country already under martial law?
Well, it's, again, since we have not seen martial law in this country or anything even really like it since, since World War II with the internment of Japanese Americans and a few select German and Italian Americans. There really hasn't been anything like that in more than 60 years. So we're in a situation that's kind of terra incognita. It's uncharted territory. We haven't really had true martial law in this country since the Civil War. And a lot of that got started because of anti-draft protests, mainly in New York City and some other major eastern cities. So it's really difficult to predict how this might go, and we just need to pray hard that the Trump administration isn't forced into a position where they have to resort to martial law, because the political fallout would be huge. At the very least, we'd see Trump reduced to a one-term president and very likely impeached. So I think Antifa's goals is to try to kind of exacerbate the whole situation to, in effect, radicalize the administration so that they can justify their own campaign.
Yeah, this is... There's so many ways that we could spin this in terms of the effects. So, okay, the radical left gets their way. I mean, we have total chaos. It's kind of like the Tet Offensive of terrorism, all of it occurring around the country at one basic time frame. What ultimately do they want to do? They want to force Trump from office. And what do you see as a follow-up? Will there be even more terror to scare the people into accepting what's coming?
Oh, I don't know. That's even harder to predict.
Yeah.
All that I can say is we need to expect the unexpected, because they're going to be using new technologies, especially cyber weapons, that could affect even some parts of the infrastructure that are in quite rural areas, things like hydroelectric dams or nuclear power plants. They could affect the telecommunication system a lot, or the natural gas pipelines. There's a lot of different infrastructure that they could attack with cyber weapons remotely, and the fact that you've moved to the country won't protect you completely, especially if they manage to take down the three national power grids or any one of them for an extended period of time. As I've mentioned before in an interview with you, the power grids really are the linchpin of our modern society. And if they go down, all bets are off. We could see literally a collapse of society if the power grids go down over a entire winter.
Even without an EMP?
Yeah, it would be the equivalent of an EMP or a X-class solar flare, but it could be done with a cyber weapon, conceivably.
Not as long-term in terms of damaging effects,
Right.
Equally effective in the short term. Is that correct?
In the short term, it would be devastating. And yeah. some cyber weapons actually can cause some permanent damage, not just causing an upset or a reset. But, for example, say you have a cyber weapon that goes after natural gas pipelines, and it causes the solenoid-type valves to repeatedly open and close to the point where those valves fail. You could actually have natural gas explosions taking place up and down pipelines. The same sort of thing can be done with a water hammer effect of solenoid-style valves on major penstock lines. If you close a penstock valve too rapidly, you can cause a penstock to blow out, and you could have massive flooding and destruction of equipment or flooding of communities take place.
This is, to me, I look at it almost the softening up for the kill. I mean, following this, America could be an occupied nation. I mean, or do you not hold that belief?
Wow. that's another imponderable. But, again, I think we need to be prayerful, and I think individual families need to be prepared. They need to get their beans, bullets, and Band-Aids squared away, because if we do see societal disruption, we're basically going to be on our own. It'll be yo-yo time. You're on your own. And it's incumbent upon us, because the government has proven itself time and time again of being incapable of responding adequately to disasters, it's incumbent upon us to prepare for our families. We need to stock up, team up, and train up.
Okay, let's talk about preparation. What should people be doing right now in anticipation of what we're seeing domestically spreading? I mean, what can people do themselves?
Well, the first and most important thing is, if you're in an urban area, at least move to the suburbs. Preferably move to a lightly populated rural area that's well removed from all major cities, if you can afford to. If your job situation, your family situation allows it, I highly recommend that you prayerfully consider strategically relocating to a lightly populated area. And if your family situation or your work situation doesn't allow that, at least stock up at least a 3-month food supply for your family, and have water filtration equipment on hand so that you can treat water from open sources.
If what you're saying, the kind of attack comes, and you are commuting and you're 20 miles from your house, will this kind of cyber attack prevent you from getting home in your automobile, or will they still operate, or how do you see that happening?
Well, if the power grids go down, that means streetlights will be out, and there could be some disruption there. Odds are people will still be able to get home unless they commute via rail. But if they're commuting in private automobiles or by bus, chances are they will get home. Now, if it's a very sophisticated cyber attack, it could attack multiple systems all at once, where not only are parts of the power grid affected, but telecommunications, the public utilities infrastructure, even banking could all be affected simultaneously if it's a coordinated attack. And because of that, if it's the banking system, people should have plenty of cash on hand. If you can afford it, I would recommend keeping the equivalent of 2 or 3 months' expenses, and I mean by that I mean all expenses, including paying your mortgage, in cash at home, well hidden. Because if the banking system is shut down, people are going to be in a situation where they won't be able to use ATM type cards. They won't be able. They certainly won't be able to use their SNAP cards for the people who are on public assistance, and they won't be able to use credit cards. Virtually any electronic transactions will be impossible for possibly for days or weeks, maybe months, I don't know. But it's important that you keep a large supply of cash on hand, preferably in small bills, and by that I mean 5s, 10s, and 20s, so that you can carry on with, you know, daily life and continue to transact some business.
Well, that makes sense, but is there any kind of guarantee that that money will be any good after a collapse? Wouldn't people...
And that's why, Dave, for many years in my blog, I've recommended that people also have a good family cache of pre-1965 mint date U.S. 90% silver coins, because that's real money. The funny money we carry around, this paper money in our wallets, and the even funnier money, which is the electronic dollars that go alongside of it, it really cannot be counted on in the long term, because inevitably all fiat currencies go to zero in value. It's just a matter of when, not if.
Okay. Gold, your recommendation there?
Gold I recommend kind of as a long-term hedge, but not for barter. Gold is too compact a form of wealth for regular barter transactions. I mean, what would you end up buying with a one-ounce Krugerrand or American Eagle? An entire year's supply of food or a vehicle? When you want to go out and buy increments of, say, you know, the equivalent of a shopping bag full of groceries or a gallon of kerosene or a gallon of gasoline, gold is just way too compact a form of wealth for that. Something like a silver dime or a silver quarter would be much more appropriate.
That's, you're really laying this out very clearly. What about communication? Because obviously during the course of a day, if this hits, you're going to have the kids in one place and the two spouses could be in different directions. And so what do you recommend for communication so families can coordinate if they're caught out away from home?
Well, if you're in level terrain, the band that I like is what's called the MERS band, which is the multiple use radio system. It's a very lightly used frequency band. At low power, it requires no license, and it has a couple of other advantages. You can get MERS walkie-talkies. They are FM line of sight. The MERS band is adjacent to a couple of other interesting frequency allocations. One is they're right next to the National Weather Service weather alert frequencies, and the other is they're very close to the 2 meter FM ham radio band. So if you have a 2 meter handheld, they can often be programmed to operate in the MERS frequencies. And if you have a MERS handheld walkie-talkie, it can be programmed to listen on the National Weather Service alert frequency, which is also quite handy. Of course, you can't transmit in that band legally. So I really recommend the MERS walkie-talkies for short range. The other advantage of them is it's the same band that's used by a couple of different brands of infrared intrusion detection systems, one of which is sold under the brand name Dakota Alert. And a Dakota Alert is essentially like a driveway alarm with an infrared beam. And if that beam is broken, it sends an alert over the MERS frequency to a base station in your house or to a walkie-talkie on your hip to tell you that there's an intruder in that area or a vehicle passing through that area. And that's really useful for people who have farms, ranches, or rural retreats. And again, that's in that same frequency band. So the same walkie-talkie that you're carrying can be used for push-to-talk. It can be used to listen to the National Weather Service weather alerts, and it can be giving you the alerts from your driveway alarm, your Dakota alert system, and you can have up to 5 or 6 of those and different locations on your property to let you know if someone's entering your property. Again, that frequency band is called MERS, M-U-R-S, Mike Uniform Romeo Sierra.
What a play on words.
I'm sorry. Is?
I mean, the MERS, I mean, you remember the old MERS mortgage fraud, which is still with us. But it's such a play on words.
Yeah.
It really is. It's striking. I'm glad to see the globalists have a sense of humor. It really is.
I guess it is a bit of a play on words. Yeah.
Go ahead. No, go ahead. I'll follow up.
In terms of communications equipment at longer range, I would recommend that your listeners get themselves licensed as radio amateurs and get set up with at least 2 meter equipment and preferably an HF transceiver, that's for a shortwave type transceiver, so they can talk long haul. With the 2 meter, that actually is FM VHF line of sight, but with the 2 meter system, most 2 meter radios are in touch with a repeater, and through repeater networks, you can talk for hundreds of miles. So I would recommend, again, that folks get licensed with a technician class, amateur radio license. There is no longer any code, Morse code memorization required. They have no, in fact, all the licenses that are now no code. So it's not difficult at all to study for the test. It's very inexpensive to obtain a license, and the capability that will give you will be tremendous. And even if you don't have the time or the inclination to be an amateur radio operator, at least buy yourself a good quality, compact, multi-band receiver so you can monitor communications and monitor international broadcasts so you can get the whole news story, even if the power grid is going down. If the grid's down, you can still operate that compact radio on battery power from, say, a car battery or a small, fairly inexpensive alternative power system with just, say, a 10 or 20 watt photovoltaic power panel and a couple of gel cell batteries or a couple of Trojan deep cycle golf cart type batteries.
Let me step aside for a second and just ask you about the amateur radio here. Mm-hmm. Is that, let's assume the powers that be take down the net. Google completes its censorship of everybody and takes everybody down that's not on their side of the page. Is this something you can broadcast from as well, or is that a different setup?
Well, if you have an amateur license, you can broadcast. To be an amateur or to be a ham radio listener, or international broadcast listener requires, of course, no license at all.
Mm-hmm.
So, but getting a license is again very inexpensive. You can study for it in just 1 weekend, and it's inexpensive to get the license. The equipment is also fairly inexpensive, especially for 2 meter. You can get what they call refer to as a bubble pack 2 meter handheld handy talkie for under $60 now. So the cost of entry into being a operating licensed amateur is between the license and the equipment is at least for handheld under $100.
Yeah, that's certainly something that people need to take a look at. Here's where I'm having trouble getting my mind around all this. I hear what you're saying about the other side, the alt-left, taking this conflict to a new level with the weapons that you talked about. But when they're successful in totally destabilizing the country, I have to wonder, what is their end game? Is it only to remove Trump through confusion and either assassination or impeachment? I mean, where is this going to go in its final steps?
Well, I'm not sure if they've even really thought this through. Because
mm-hmm.
most of the foot soldiers in Antifa really are just disaffected Democrats with a socialist bent. They're basically your Bernie Sanders supporters on steroids. I'm not sure if they've thought it all through in terms of what they really want to follow kicking Trump out of office. Because I don't think their goal is just to see Mr. Pence in office.
No, but nature abhors a vacuum. And if this chaos results in the departure of Trump, something's got to take his place. And I don't think it's going to be necessarily a president per se will be the answer to this question. I think it's an encroaching philosophy or I don't know.
Dave, they're obviously socialists, and I think the higher-ups in the Antifa organization really want to see global socialist government. That's their goal. They, you know, the New World Order, the One World Order, whatever you want to call it, I think really is their goal. And while the real foot soldiers lower down in the organization may just be, you know, dyed-in-the-wool, ultra-left Democrats, the higher-ups really are in lockstep with the George Soroses of the world.
It's funny you'd mention his name. I was just going to bring this up because there is support for what you're saying. You're talking about the installation of global government, which means basically America is no more. And this is effectively what George Soros, and I know this firsthand for a fact, that he's put large sums of money into the CalExit movement, which is now rekindled, and it's going again, and they want California to leave the country and basically become a protectorate under the United Nations. So right. You know, I think there's a lot of legitimacy in what you're saying there, because I'm seeing proof of this with the CalExit movement. Well, let me shift gears in the time we have left. Let me just ask you this, because I want to blend the two together. At the end of the day, you're talking about communication. I'm sure you're talking about food, water filtration, and so forth. But how does your preparation change if a war is coming, such as North Korea?
If we had a global conflict of the scale of World War II, where we had basically a new axis and a new set of allies lining up, we could see a world war that could last decades. And we could see severe shortages. We could see severe disruption of the economy. And we could probably see food rationing. So, with that in mind, people need to, again, stock up and at least have containers for gasoline so they can barter back and forth. They need to have a hefty supply of food on hand, and they probably should purchase that as quietly as possible, preferably with cash, because if we get into a martial law type situation or a rationing situation where it becomes illegal to, quote, hoard, unquote, food, we need to be very circumspect about who knows that we have a large supply of food on hand. And just generally, people need to look back to the history of World War II and look at all the shortages that developed, all the hardships at the family level that existed. It was a very uncomfortable time. And unlike World War II, the war could very well come to our own shores.
It's
so
interesting.
Again,
interesting.
The place to live is in a lightly populated region where you're away from any target zones.
This is really stepping aside here, but I don't know if you're familiar with the Amazon Prime TV show called The Man in the High Castle.
Yes.
And just for the listening audience, if they're not familiar with it, in this scenario, and leaving out the sci-fi part of it, America got hit by atomic weapons. They lose the war. The German Reich occupies the majority of the country, but they hand off to their Japanese allies the Pacific states. And America is basically under a, when the show picks up in 1962, they're under a 17-year martial law, kind of a lockdown situation where there's no due process and Americans aren't running their own show, and America is being occupied. And let's take a minute and talk about this, because America's never been occupied as a nation. I mean, yes, we were invaded by the British in the War of 1812, but they didn't get very far. They burned down Washington, D.C., were stopped at Baltimore. But we've never been occupied. And this is a foreign concept Americans can't even bring themselves to think about. You said the war could come to our shores, and I totally agree with you. If we lose that war and we are occupied, what does that mean for people? What would you say to them about their survival?
Wow. it doesn't save too much for life expectancy, and certainly for anyone who is not circumspect in their preparations, if you've left a big paper trail behind in your firearms acquisitions, large purchases of ammunition, large purchases of storage food, it could very well turn you into a target. So what I would recommend is that people keep a very low profile in their preps, and in the event of occupation, people need to be prepared to relocate at very short notice and kind of break the paper trail if they're in a situation where they do have a extensive paper trail behind them. Because otherwise you're going to end up on some roundup list and end up behind barbed wire. So that will take a lot of clandestine organization, teamwork, a lot of money. It takes cash to be on the run. But if you have to relocate under duress, you should really have contingency plans for doing so. Hopefully you've got country cousins and you can make a break and essentially disappear. The chances of most people being able to accomplish that are probably pretty slim. So let's pray we're never occupied. And if we are, let's not fight with one hand behind our backs. It would have to be an all-out guerrilla war to try to free ourselves from enemy occupation.
Well, I think with the 300 million handguns we have, I think that's a given, and 7 million veterans, you know, fighting age. I think that an occupying force is going to have a difficult time.
But especially in mountainous rural areas, for example. And they, even in the cities, they would have a huge problem with urban guerrillas.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. But I also think this would exponentially increase the need for brutality on the part of the occupying force.
Yes. Anytime there's any resistance, you can count on reprisals. And the reprisals, if you look at the history of the 20th century, in the 21st century, the reprisals would probably be incredibly brutal and result in massive loss of life and deprivation of just life, liberty, and property.
Well, I remember in France when they would assassinate a German, the SS would go ground up 100 French and execute them right in the public square.
Right.
That was common practice.
Same sort of thing. But again, that's an absolute worst-case scenario. I don't anticipate the occupation of the United States in our lifetimes, but there's always the outside chance of that. We never know what circumstances might take place. For example, if we got into a nuclear exchange and we ended up in a nuclear blackmail situation where we were told, well, accept this occupation or cities X, Y, and Z are also going to be nuked, we might very well see capitulation.
If you were forced to bug out, my initial gut feeling would be you couldn't go in your car and you wouldn't be on roads because you'd be subject to the papers and pleas and the roadblock searches. You'd almost have to do it on foot, wouldn't you?
Yeah, you would. Pretty much cross country or conceivably by boat, depending on where, for people in coastal areas. Any kind of vehicular bug out would be problematic under a martial law situation or an occupation.
Yeah, so you'd really have to hoof it. So wherever you're going to bug out to, I'm thinking...
Hopefully a well-stocked rural retreat that's fully stocked in advance, because if you're just going out with what you can carry on your back, then that doesn't leave you in a very viable situation for long-term survival.
Yeah, it certainly doesn't, and you're so right about that. Also, too, I would assume you'd advise people not to bug out with their cell phone, even with the battery out.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. The last thing you want is a beacon telling the authorities exactly where you're located.
Yeah, with your distinct digital signal. This is something I had someone in the NSA tell me, former NSA. He said, it's not enough for you to leave your cell phone at home if you bug out. He said, if you're in someone's living room and they have a cell phone in the room, that the NSA has equipment that can basically identify your voice in that room. And if you're on a watch list, then that could trigger a notification, hey, this is where you can go find the person.
He's absolutely right.
And you know about that.
You have to have essentially zero electronic signature. So you'd want to your bug out location preferably to be in a non-cell phone covered region, and you would have to disable any internet connected devices, basically sever your internet connection from that home, and disconnect even the landline phones.
Because they can be listened to and your television can be monitored. And
right. Well, unfortunately, we live in the age of the Internet of Things, and there are so many Internet-connected devices now that your only chance would be to go completely off the grid.
No computers.
Right. No computers, no phones, no cell phones. And unfortunately, that brings up another problem, and that is if you're in a suburban area, for example, where they expect to see an electronic signature. If there's no signature, then that constitutes an indicator that you're trying to hide something.
Oh, catch 22.
Yeah.
Wow.
So again, your bug out location should be in a very lightly populated area that is not inside of cellular coverage.
And how would you even know that?
Well, all the major cellular carriers publish maps of their cellular coverage areas, and if you overlay those maps together, you'll see there's about 20% of the country that still is not inside of cellular coverage, mainly very lightly populated regions like where I live. So it takes a little research, but all that information is available online.
That is fantastic.
Of course, if you're doing that kind of search, you want to do it from a public library, not on your own computer.
Yeah, exactly.
Am I sounding really paranoid or what?
Well, no, listen, Jim, we're kind of in the same boat. We're both going to be on the watch list. And this is why I tell people now, scramble your IP. It may not do any good, but it can't hurt.
Well, Dave, I'm fond of saying that there's only one list. We're all on it. Just some of us are farther up than others.
Yeah, good point. That's a great point. Well, I want to talk about your website before we go real quick, survivalblog.com.
Right.
And there's so much good stuff there. I'm looking at the site right now, and you have preparedness notes for Thursday, August 17th here. You had this in some alternatives to health insurance for Americans. I mean, there's something there for everybody. It's such a great website. I go there a lot. And I get a lot of show ideas from this, not just to interview you, but things that I want to look into that you write about. So I would encourage people to visit. And I know we're out of time, but I got to tell you, you've left my audience with their head spinning, because mine is too, because now they're contemplating their own morality and thinking, how do I save my backside? Always fascinating, Jim, when we talk. I appreciate you coming on, and I look forward to the next time that we visit.
Thank you so much, David, and I pray the 91st Psalm for you and all your listeners.
Oh, thank you so much, and the same to you, my friend. And hopefully we'll both be around, not on the run, to talk again and do another interview.
Thank you, and God bless.
Good okay, night. Good night. Well, that's James Wesley Rawls. Easy guy to like. But he doesn't pull any punches, does he? And could you believe what he said, what the next level of these so-called manufactured protests are going to go to? I mean, ISIS has nothing on these people. I mean, absolutely nothing. Absolutely phenomenal what's going on. One of the things I wished I would have stressed with him, and I'm going to throw this out here now, that I wished I would have mentioned and been a little more forceful in talking about, well, when the crisis subsides and you survive, what do you need? And one of the things that we did not hit on was the idea of precious metals. And this is why, you know, I represent Steve. You need to have gold and silver when you come out of this. Now, some people say Bitcoin, and I'm not so sure they're not right, because that 62-mile limit that we talked about, Bitcoin's going there, and so is the rest of the cryptocurrencies. So that's a real possibility. But I also tell you, I'm going to use Bitcoin as an intermediary to buy precious metals. In other words, I'll make the money on the Bitcoin or the other cryptocurrencies, and then I'm going to turn around and buy more gold and silver, because that plus your trading and bartering, even if you don't smoke, you should have cigarettes and whiskey and alcohol, because those are trading and bartering items that are going to be valuable with a lot of people that you don't think about. But none will be more valuable when you come out of the crisis than good old-fashioned gold and silver. And let me give out Steve's number here. I recommend you call him tomorrow, because if you've got more than a month's worth of money in your savings account, you're preparing to throw it away. Because when this stuff goes down that Jim was talking about, do you think your bank's going to be left standing? Do you think they're going to just willingly give you your money back? And they don't have to legally, because they own it when you put it in. Okay, Renaissance Precious Metals, 406-586-4842. I know there's a lot of good places to go to, but I use Steve for a reason. Wow, what a show. I mean, and I apologize again for the technical difficulties, although I don't know what power we have over that. I want to remind everybody that those videos that I mentioned are up on our YouTube, but the one with the 10 UN photos, the Rollins, Wyoming one is there with the EMP-proof satellite communication. That's there, and those photos are there, but the 10 are not there, and we're going to have those up before we go to bed. We'll try to repost, and it could be that YouTube is just going to pull it all together. I mean, that is a real possibility, and if that's the case, we're just going to post that up on thecommonsenseshow.com in the morning. And I would encourage you to go there. And I will tell you another thing. Mike Adams did mention the importance of apps, that to when Google limits your traffic as a website provider, you really need to have the apps. Well, we do, and it's on the right-hand column of thecommonsenseshow.com, and it's one-stop shopping. It's everything. It's our newsletter. It's our articles. It's our YouTube productions. It's our archives. It's everything. And right now it's for Android users, but I'm going to be having a discussion with our webmaster, Daniel Claussen, and we're going to be talking about moving into the iPhone arena as well, too. And we chose Android because they're far more numerous than the iPhones. But we're going to hit both of these as well with the app. And like I said, we are going to put a lot more in to our radio show, because the radio show is the one thing that the globalists can't affect. And we're probably going to change our format. We're going to have at least 1 hour where we go to rapid-fire interviews and get 5 minutes here, 8 minutes there. We're working on that format right now, and we've got to readjust the show and the segments to do that. And I'm working on that with the help with my webmaster, because he used to do TV productions and so forth. So we're getting all that lined up. We aren't giving up the fight. We are getting our backsides kicked by Google right now. And I'm telling you, if the independent media goes away, the public is not going to have any way to know what's coming, and more importantly, what they can do to combat what's coming. Anyway, we'll be back next week with more information about the challenges we face. Go out and have a great week. God bless everybody.